Well, now, something for the weekend. If you're looking for a thrilling read or watch, our next guest might have just the thing for you. Craig Sisterson has been dubbed the godfather of New Zealand crime writing, appreciated as, quote, one of the few people who have devoted so much of their lives to their passion for stories that thrill, frighten, puzzle and surprise us. That praise from the Australian crime author Michael Rowbottom. Craig is a New Zealand feature writer, critic, festival coordinator, awards judge and founder of the Nio Marsh Awards that celebrate crime, mystery and thriller writing. He's living in the UK these days where he's just put out his first book. It's called Southern Cross Crime, a pocket essential guide to the crime fiction, film and TV of Australia and New Zealand. It's part of a series by a London publisher looking at fiction and film country by country. Sort of a lonely planet for the arts and entertainment world. Craig is with us from London. Hello, great to talk.
Kia ora, Catherine. How are you going this morning?
I'm good, thank you very much. And congratulations on the new book. How big a project was it?
I guess it was one of the larger projects I've ever done, because I normally just write feature articles that are like 1,000 or 2,000 words, or when I was a legal journalist, they might have been 6,000 or 7,000 words. So it was substantially larger than that. It was a fairly sizable project that took a while, which was a little different from me, because I'm very much a deadline person, used to working intensely to deadline rather than stretching things out over many months. So it was a little bit different.
Was most of it already in your head? I mean, obviously an enormous amount of research and writing, but do you carry that bigger library around in your head that you were able to do a wall plan fairly quickly?
I certainly led heavily on what I've been doing the last 10, 11, 12 years in terms of writing feature articles, interviewing authors and reviewing crime fiction for various magazines and newspapers, both in New Zealand and overseas. So there was certainly a lot of background there. And when I went to kind of sketch out, you know, the kind of topics we should include, which authors we should include, you know, how far back in history we should go, I had quite a lot to call on then, but I made sure to do a substantial amount of research just to make sure that I wasn't missing things that I just hadn't come across myself. You don't want to have that hubris of thinking you know everything, because there's so much out there. And so I ran things past some reviewer colleagues in Australia as well as New Zealand, just to say, hey, look, there's some gaps here. What do you think? Who do you think should be included? So I called on a few friends as well, just to make sure that the coverage was balanced and inclusive and diverse as possible. So
let's look at this as an extension of the things you have done over the past decade. I mean, you might be too polite to name some of them, but let's look at the founding of the Nio Marsh Awards, of course, such a renowned mystery writer really here. And how did that come about?
The Nio Marsh Awards was basically back in about 2009. I'd started writing about crime fiction for some magazines and newspapers in New Zealand, reviewing it, and I just kind of noticed that New Zealand was pretty much the only English-speaking country outside of perhaps Belize in Latin America that didn't have a crime writing award. England had them, Great Britain had them, Australia had them, Canada had them, the US had several. And we had a lot of amazing writers, and they wouldn't get recognised necessarily for our main awards at the time, which might have been called the Montanas, now called the Ockham Awards, because they tended to lean literary, like the Booker Prizes tend to lean literary. But for the crime writers in Britain, it didn't really matter if they weren't nominated for the Booker Prize, because they had their own crime fiction awards. We didn't have that in New Zealand. We had romance writing awards, we had sci-fi, fantasy, speculative fiction awards, but we didn't have crime. And so I just started talking to some people in the New Zealand books industry, and people thought it was a really good idea and someone should do it. And eventually I got to the stage, sorry, I've got to be careful not to swear here since we're live, of just going, okay then, it might as well be me that does it. And I called on a few people to help out, and we started it.
I suspect those swearing moments of frustration have probably got you involved in a whole lot of things. How healthy is the sub genre or the sub culture, actually, rather than the genre, because we know we've got some fantastic crime writers here. We're going to talk about some of them, often more recognised overseas than here, ironically. We're going to talk about that. But the health of the culture, like I know you co-founded the Rotorua Noir Festival in 2019. I'm conscious that there are collaborative bunch in a way, aren't they, crime writers? I don't know whether it's because you almost end up a bit of a fanatic wherever you are on the scale, but what sorts of things have bubbled up and started happening, whether it's, you know, the Mystery in the Library series or the Noir festivals or the workshops, what's happened again over the last decade or so?
Well, it's one of those things, I think, where the readers were always out there. Crime fiction is often the most popular, or crime and romance kind of battling it out, as the most popular genres, whether you look at bookshops, whether you look at library loans and things like that. So the readers were always out there. And we had some really good New Zealand authors, but our New Zealand readers often tended to read more overseas authors. They weren't aware of our local authors as much. And with some of the things we've done, first with the Naya Marsh Awards, and then we started some library events based off those, the Mystery in the Library series. We started trying to bring both cast a spotlight on our local authors who are of like world-class quality, because I should just to go a slight tangent, when we did start the Naya Marsh Awards in 2010, we actually had a majority of overseas international judges involved in the awards. So we had people who judged the Daggers in the UK and people who were the vice president of the Canadian Crime Writers Association, because we wanted the awards to have that kind of global outlook and have overseas people looking at our New Zealand writers as well, rather than just local reviewers. So we knew from all the comments we got from kind of those people who are incredibly credible and well-known, and even if they're not household names because they're reviewers and stuff, but they're well thought of and their opinions are highly regarded, that they thought so highly of some of our New Zealand crime writers. So we knew that we always had some really quality authors. It's just that they weren't necessarily that well-known. And so with Mystery in the Library and some other things we've done, Word Christchurch has been fantastic. They've been alongside us from the very start in 2010, even though that festival was cancelled because of the earthquakes that year, they still did an event with us, a standalone event later in the year, and they've been by our side the whole way through. Many other festivals around New Zealand have invited crime writers over the last 10 years, whether it's, you know, it's Auckland or it's Hawke's Bay or it's New Zealand International Arts or it's Going West. Many of them have invited crime writers at various times in various years, and then the Mystery in the Library and others. And so we're just increasingly trying to bring readers and writers and book lovers, whether they be publishers or editors or others, reviewers and booksellers and libraries, kind of all together. And it was, there's a bit of a community. There's a lot of keen readers out there. And of those readers, there are plenty that like meeting up with other readers at events and stuff like that. So
What is the source? You mentioned romance and crime tend to be the best selling all the time, and I want to talk about why that might be, why we keep returning to them. But for your own love of crime and mystery fiction that has led to, you know, a side career that's, I think you're a commercial lawyer and then a legal journalist, but this has become a major, major part of your life. What was it for you? Just that under the covers bed reading from the earliest age?
Yeah, well, I grew up in Nelson, or in Richmond, which is a small town just outside of Nelson. And I remember I really loved the Hardy Boys. Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew were kind of when you were a kid. And I really loved the Hardy Boys. I've read a little bit of Secret Seven by Enid Blyton, but I particularly loved the Hardy Boys adventures when I was, you know, in Standard One and stuff. You know, I was only six or 7 or 8 years old kind of thing reading those. And then kind of got on to Agatha Christie and Sherlock Holmes as I was an adolescent, even before I got to high school. And I think at the start it was the sense of adventure and the sense of mystery as a young kid, you know, the who did it or the whodunit, and would the heroes, whether it was the Hardy Boys or Sherlock Holmes or Hercule Poirot, whether they would work it out, whether they would stop, catch the killers or the robbers or whoever it was. Not all the Hardy Boys ones were necessarily murders. So there was that, the puzzle aspect, the trying to work things out aspect, the kind of thrill and adventure and mystery aspect. And I always enjoyed that, as along with reading a lot of other things. And I think as I've aged, I've just found myself appreciating crime fiction in different ways. I still enjoy that thrill and the puzzle aspect, but I also find that nowadays a lot of the really great crime fiction that I love, it's kind of like, I'm kind of cribbing from Ian Rankin and others who've said this, is that crime is the modern social novel, because crime fiction often tells you a lot about people and place, whether it's his book set in Edinburgh or you read someone like Michael Connelly or Steph Chars' Your House Will Pay, which just recently won the LA Times Book Prize, which is one of the best books I've read in the last couple of years. And it's a crime novel set in the Korean and Black communities in LA. And it just tells you, you learn so much about the communities and what's going on through the prism of a exciting page-turning story. And so I think there's a lot of things to love about crime fiction, and I'm sure as there are about all other genres as well. But that's kind of what draws me to it. So.
Dennis Lehane would be another you'd put in that category, wouldn't he?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
It's kind of the Dickens novel of our times is I guess what you're alluding to. I don't want to get sucked into the violence thing, but that has been a change, and we love our Nordic noir. And just thinking of some of our leading crime writers there, that don't hold back sometimes, and I'm thinking about the international bestsellers as well. So without disappearing down the rabbit hole of how much is too much and what the consequences are. Is that one of the changes we've seen over time? Does it just come with a greater sort of, sort of liberation on all fronts, really? We've sort of, you know, we just tell it like it is a bit more and don't try and protect readers as much.
So just to clarify, you basically ask, is crime fiction more violent nowadays than it was in Naomi Marsh and Agatha Christie's days?
Well, has it become increasingly more graphic?
That's a really tricky question. I kind of actually wrote an essay for Steve Brawnius about this last year, about violence against women in crime writing. It is quite a complex question, because there's definitely been an increase, particularly in television and film, and to a lesser extent in books, probably since the 80s with Silence of the Lambs and things like that. There's definitely been, you know, there's far more forensics in crime fiction. Almost every crime television show has forensics, even if it's not a forensics show. You go to the morgue and things like that. And there's definitely a lot more of that. There's a lot more serial killer stuff than there used to be from the 70s, 80s onwards. So without a doubt, there is more graphically violent crime fiction available out there in the world. But there is also such a massive amount of crime fiction that still only makes up part of the genre. And it's often a part that's focused on exclusively by some people, as if they think that that's the entire genre. There's an organization called Malice Domestic in North America, and that kind of celebrates the traditional Naomi Marsh, Agatha Christie style cozy mysteries, they call them, where they're basically sexless and bloodless, for want of a better phrase. Any violence happens off screen. You know, people get murdered, but you don't see it. You don't see the body. You don't kind of dwell on the body or the forensics or anything like that. And that's huge. And there's a massive part of the genre that's still in that cozy category. And there's plenty of crime fiction that depicts violence in a variety of ways, without kind of dwelling on the forensics or dwelling on the kind of the state of the body. There's a term that those of us kind of who love the genre as well as people outside of it kind of use of torture porn, for want of a better phrase, which is kind of the really graphic serial killer stuff where the serial killer does something really nasty, often to a young woman. And there are certainly writers who go deep into that, perhaps to hide that they don't have such compelling stories to tell without that. But there are many, many amazing writers who briefly brush over the graphic or the violent stuff, and it's more implied rather than described in detail. And your imagination goes there, but it's not necessarily on the page that much. And they tell beautiful stories and complex stories and social stories that may still address that violence, because that's a reality in our society, without kind of dwelling. So it's, sorry for the long-winded answer, Catherine. It's just, it's not a black and white question. It's a very kind of complicated one. So
Look, it makes a lot of sense, and you're right. Sometimes it's probably it's the Scandi noir that, you know, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, etc., Stieg Larsson and others, that became massively popular, that possibly skew our perception because they have become so so predominant. Somebody have seen them. Interestingly, the current Nia Marsh Book Award title holder is Fiona Kidman for This Mortal Boy. We interviewed her. It's a social story and a legal story as much as anything.
There's violence, and there's real, authentic, actually happened violence in that book, but you wouldn't call it graphic in any way, and you wouldn't call it. And the same with, like, Jane Harper's The Dry, which is a book that's kind of really catapulted Australian and New Zealand crime fiction kind of to global view, so to speak. There were many, many Australian and New Zealand crime writers who were writing fantastic books before Jane came along, but she's certainly, like Stieg Larsson and Henning Mankell were for Scandinavian and particularly Swedish crime, or like Ian Rankin and Val McDermid were for Scottish crime, Jane is kind of one who's really got a lot of eyes turned our way now with The Dry. And that's an amazing book, set in the outback in a farming community, beautiful setting. There's some violence in it. It's a small town story. There's some violence. There's a family killing that's brutal and nasty. But it's very far away from torture porn. She doesn't dwell on any of that stuff. It's there, but it's not kind of like gratuitous in any way. And it's a beautifully written story about small town communities and secrets and everything like that. And that's, you know, one of the major Australian New Zealand crime novels of recent years. So, I think our better writers know how to strike the balance. Paul Cleave, probably one of the most well-known New Zealand crime writers, he writes some pretty violent stuff at times, but he also does it with a really nice touch, and I don't think he ever really goes too far. And he's a beautiful, wonderful writer. He's a very literary writer that people don't realise sometimes as well. And with some of the things he does, there's a bit of magic realism thrown into some of his books, but a second-person perspective and multiple perspectives going on, which is quite rare. So he's got some really cool things going on, but he doesn't shy away from having his hero beat up a suspect to try and save a girl, you know, kind of thing. But
One of those who sells literally millions overseas as well, Craig.
He's
books
incredibly
overseas.
Popular in Germany and France in particular. So,
Craig Sisterson is our guest. We are talking about his new book, Southern Cross Crime, A Pocket Essential to the Crime Fiction, Film and TV of Australia and New Zealand. 29 minutes past 10 it is. Craig, do you want to just, I don't know whether you want to go back in time or forward in time. You mentioned how you structured the book. But do you want to introduce us to some of the writers, perhaps from a little further back, that people may not know so much about, but ought to?
Okay, well, the book itself just is kind of focused on the last 25 years, what we're calling the modern era, from the mid-90s to now. And we chose that time period because the Australian Crime Writers Association was set up in the mid-90s. The first Ned Kelly Award, which is the Australian Crime Writing Prizes, was given out in 1996. For books that were published in 1995. So we thought that was a good starting point. Also, just kind of nicely, the first award was actually shared by a New Zealander and an Australian. There were co-winners the first year. Our own Paul Thomas, with one of his Tito Ihaka books, was a co-winner of that first year. So it seemed like a nice starting point. But yeah, Australian and New Zealand crime writing history goes back to the 1800s, among the very first crime novels in the world, in fact. It's always a fun quiz question for people is, what was the best-selling detective novel of the 19th century or the 1800s? And most people assume it's a Sherlock Holmes novel, but it's not. It's actually a novel by a guy who got his law degree at the University of Otago and then moved to Melbourne to become a playwright and wrote a book called The Mystery of a Hansom Cab. And his name was Fergus Hume. And that outsold all the Sherlock Holmes books and everything else of the time. And it was written by a Kiwi lawyer who set his book in Australia. So. So that was pretty cool. But 20 years before that, there were a couple of women kind of on the Australian goldfields and living in colonial Australia, one called Ellen Davitt and one called Mary Fortune. And they were writing crime stories in the 1860s, which were literally some of the first police procedural or crime novels in the world. So Australian and New Zealand crime history goes back a long way. And interestingly, right from the start, it was plenty of women leading the way, which obviously we had Naya Marsh from the 1930s onwards as well. So.
When we look at the other question here, which is... how much region affects or location affects, and obviously it can have it can be an extra character, really. Have many of our New Zealand writers set in their own sort of, you know, small town backyards? Obviously some have, or do they often choose to head overseas with a view to the international market? What are some of the great settings for our crime novels that have really stood out to you?
Oh yeah, we have some really amazing settings now, Catherine. Interestingly, kind of 10, 15, 20 years ago, our authors were strongly encouraged to set their books overseas for a long time. Michael Robotham, in fact, who you mentioned and who wrote the foreword to Southern Cross Crime, he sets all his books overseas, largely in England, sometimes elsewhere, because he was based as a journalist in England for a number of years before moving back to Australia. But he was pretty much specifically told by his publishers, don't bother setting a book in Australia. Things have changed significantly since that time. Paul Cleave set some wonderful books in Christchurch. Gives you a very dark, twisted sense of Christchurch, but it's still very good, a very strong setting. Vander Simon's books in Dunedin and kind of small town Otago, really wonderful sense of that deep south of the south. Paddy Richardson set some amazing stuff down there as well. Nikki Crutchley, who's kind of an author from Cambridge, but actually kind of sets her books more on the Coromandel kind of peninsula, gives that sense of small town setting. Trish McCormick sets her books in the national parks of the South Island. Trish is an archivist in Wellington, but she was a journalist and worked in the national parks on the West Coast before that. And she has a series starring a glacier guide and amateur sleuth, Philippa Barnes, which is set in our national parks. Yeah, we have a lot of great settings. I mean, Nathan Blackwell, a book that's come out in the last couple of years, was a finalist for both Naya Marsh Awards and recently just got published here in the UK in November. That has a really strong sense of Auckland, kind of Auckland and West Auckland. There are several others. I mean, I could list names for you for an hour. But
it's fantastic stuff. I love having a glacier guide involved, but it is fantastic stuff. The other focus of the book, another focus of the book, is New Zealand and Australian TV and film of the past 25 years, and there's more of a sample representation here. What stood out for you? What have you cited?
Well, yeah, because we largely wanted to focus on authors and novels, but also acknowledge some of the really cool crime television and films. And so with the authors section, I've covered authors who set their books in Australia and New Zealand and those Australian and New Zealand authors who set their books overseas. But with the film and TV section, we've solely focused on screen stories that are actually set in Australia and New Zealand. So, you know, for example, Wellington-based Neil Cross writes Luther, amazing, really top-notch crime drama set in London. So that's not included in the book, though I do kind of reference it somewhere. But it's not included in the book because it's not set in Australia or New Zealand. But yeah, in terms of Australian and New Zealand film and television, recently there's some really good stuff going on. A particular favourite of mine is a show called Mystery Road, which is set in outback Australia. Yes. And it's about Detective Jay Swan, who's an Aboriginal detective played by Aaron Pedersen, who you could argue is the king of screen crime drama in Australia. He's been in about, I think I included about 60 film and television shows in the book, and he's probably features in about 10 of them. you know, he's been in a lot. He's as cops and as other figures and stuff. But this is kind of his masterpiece performance. It was actually a movie called Mystery Road that came out a few years ago. It was amazing, and it had Aboriginal directors and writers, a lot of cast and crew as well. And then there was a sequel called Goldstone, which was really fantastic, set kind of a time after the first film. And then they actually brought out a kind of six-part, you know, 4 to 6-part television series that's kind of set in between the two films. And the first series was amazing. And I believe they've just shown the second series in Australia. I haven't seen it over here in the UK yet. I think they're just showing it now, or it's just been shown. So I highly recommend that to people if they can catch that. Also, interestingly, because we mentioned Michael Rabotham, There's actually a television show called The Secrets She Keeps, and it's a new 6-part drama. And interestingly, because Michael has never set any of his books in Australia, and he kind of wants to at some stage in future, I think, but he's had so many stuff from publishers when he started out not to do it. And now he's seeing everyone else is doing it. He's like, he lives in Sydney, he's an Australian author. But the funny thing is, And this is a reverse of what sometimes happens, is that The Secret She Keeps, the television drama, is based on one of his novels. The novel's set in London, but they've actually set the television drama in Sydney. So they've actually brought it back to Australia and New Zealand for the TV drama. And that's just out, like, literally this week and last week in Australia. And I just checked before we got on the phone, and New Zealanders can watch it on TVNZ On Demand. It's on there now, so...
Nice work. We should just mention also, I'm just listening to you wondering if we punch above our weight, actually, per capita with the calibre of some of these writers. But I'm going to finish with a different question, if you wouldn't mind, which is writing for younger readers. And is this something else that we are seeing? I'm thinking here of Tina Shaw's book, Make a Hard Fist, and I think it's something else you deal with in the book, Young Adult and Juvenile Crime Writing.
Yeah, that was something, Catherine, where I decided to go my own way a little bit. The series that has been run by the publisher in London, they've done books on Nordic noir and European noir, Brit noir, American noir. They've tended to focus on adult contemporary crime fiction and television shows. I've included a little bit of historical crime fiction in the book, so books written in the last 25 years but set far in the past. And I've also included a section on young adult and middle grade crime and mystery fiction, because I think that anyone who encourages kids to read and anyone who creates exciting page-turning stories for kids, we really need to acknowledge them, because they do amazing things. And that's like how I fell in love with reading as a kid. And my daughter, who's only 5, loves reading, and she's reading, you know, kids' books, and I'm reading kids' books to her. And we've got some amazing, we've always had amazing kids' authors in New Zealand, you know, Margaret Mahey and Lindley Dodd and Joy Cowley, and you could just, again, you could talk for an hour about them. And we've got some really cool mystery writers too, like Ella West, as you mentioned, Tina Shaw, that Make Hard Fist is an amazing book. Helen Vivian Fletcher writes young adult stuff, and she's been a finalist for our Nia Marsh Awards as well. Rainfall by Ella West is fantastic, and as well as Night Vision, an earlier book from her. We've got lots. So I was very pleased to include a section on there, and obviously several Australian kind of young adult and middle grade authors as well. So,
do we punch above our weight, do you think, in this genre, if you look at per capita comparisons with other countries?
It's a phrase we often use in New Zealand and Australia, basically saying we're small but we do well on the world stage, for anything really, don't we, whether it's science or sport or Olympic medals or anything. I mean, there's definitely a strong argument that we do when you look at our population and how many great crime writers we had. I mean, I've included about 250 authors in the book in terms of having entries on them, you know, a paragraph or two on them, as well as listing, you know, a few dozen others at the end of chapters, just as kind of further reading, just because. And it was hard to narrow it down to that, you know, you'd think, oh, 250 authors from Australia and New Zealand from the last 20, 25 years, well, that's plenty. But no, I was, you know, there was some authors I've read and enjoyed that I couldn't really squeeze in there and stuff. I tried to be representative and diverse both geographically and time periods and in other ways as well, and kind of give a really good overview. But yeah, there's, I mean, we've had, I'm trying to think off the top of my head, we've had about 70 entries in our best first novel category in the Naya Marsh Awards in the last 4 years. So about seven. So it's about, there's about 70 new authors total. And that's only first-time authors. That's not including the likes of Dame Fiona Kidman or Renee and others who've written amazing other books and then decided to write their first-ever crime novels. So that's not including them. That's just the first-time authors. And Australia's obviously significantly more with their best first novel people. So, yeah, there's a lot of fresh talent coming through. There's a lot of great quality authors, and there's a really good range. So I think no matter what you enjoy, you can find something you like. My old boss at the legal magazine, Doris Bennington, who's now a lawyer again, she's a judge of our Naya Marsh Awards now. But the funny thing is, Catherine, when I started doing this 11 or 12 years ago, Doris was all for me writing crime fiction reviews in the magazine. But she didn't read crime herself. She was the kind of person who would buy the Booker Prize long list every year, and they were the books she'd read. And over time, she started kind of cherry-picking the more literary crime novels I had on my bookshelf at work, and I'd lend her some. And now she reads crime all the time. And she thought she hated it, and now she realized she loved it because it's such a broad church. You can read stuff that's horror-like. You can read stuff that's funny. You can read stuff that's cozy and doesn't have much blood or sex, and it's just a puzzle. You can read stuff that's amazing literary fiction that just happens to be about crime. So... yeah, I think there's something for everyone if you want to find it.
You've done a real service. Sorry for that feedback, Craig. You've done a real service then in pulling so much of this together. I'm sure it will rejuvenate interest in a lot of writers and, in fact, probably introduce people to some they never knew about. Thanks so much, Craig Sisterson. And the book is called Southern Cross Crime. It has been released in ebook and audiobook form. The paperback's been pushed back and is due late September, but well worth getting your hands on then.